Hey guys, we're the Hard Time Strongman podcast, training with a bear class of man. And today we are going to talk about estimating range. The episode is called Range Finder. References for today: Armchair Sniper, Good Old Farmer's Almanac, and FM23-10 Sniper Training. All those links will be in the description for y'all to view at your discretion, at your pleasure. So, purpose for today, we're going to teach the skills necessary for you to be able to locate and engage targets of opportunity. And just eyeball it. I mean, you should be able to do this as an adult thing, but more tools in the tool belt.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know, man. I feel like everyone can intrinsically do this to a point. Some people are better at it than others. I remember having to teach kids how to do this. And like, ask them, all right, how far away is that, you know, that brick building? And they give me a number. I'm like, okay, walk it out. You know, yeah, just this... maybe get a physical, you know, physical call on how far something actually is.
Right, and this does tie in a little bit to land nav as well, because you got to be able to terrain associate. Like, if you don't have a rangefinder, your map's your next best guess. You know, I guess, for lack of better terms. So. Got to be able to train.
You're just opening a map for the first time. You're like, okay, I see this, this, and this. Where the hell am I? Ballpark. You know, you need to be able to at least get somewhere. You know, somewhere in the right area.
Oh, dude, yeah. I still remember the first time I opened up a topographical map when I was a kid, and I'm just like, I don't know what I'm looking at. This is weird.
Yeah.
I mean, now I get it, but. Still, yeah, it's getting into subjects like this is kind of a bit, I don't know. I feel like you can get a false sense of security going into something like this, because I mean, rangefinders are becoming more and more common. I mean, hell, they have them in golf. They have them obviously for shooting. You can use them in engineering. There's a lot of practical applications for rangefinders.
Well, the technical aspect of it, you know, the equipment aspect of it, yeah, I agree, people are, you know, accustomed to having stuff available to them. But also, like I was joking earlier, you know, people have a general idea of distance just from, you know, living. And unless that's tested, you know, like you said, you have a false sense of security there. Unless if you, you know your stuff and you have several ways to test that, then, you know, who knows, especially with something like shooting, like what we're primarily talking about today, right? You think of the science behind this, like putting a projectile like that going, you know, thousands of feet per second on a target, who knows how far away, you know, there's a lot of math that goes into that. And if you screw that up, it's going to be exponential.
Oh, yes.
You know, like we talked about in our land nav class, you know, shooting an azimuth, this is the difference of, you know, a foot and, you know, a football field. You know, you could be, you know, if unchecked, you could royally screw yourself.
Oh, yes. God, yes.
So, with that being said, let's kick it off with factors affecting range estimation. So, factor number one, the nature of the target. So, an object with a regular outline, like a house or a building, is going to appear closer than an object with an irregular outline. So an outline that's like a grove or a clump of trees, something that's not very defined. A target that contains or that contrasts its background appears closer than it actually is. So
makes sense.
So a black silhouette on a white wall is going to look closer than it actually is. That's just how, you know, that's to do with how your eyes take in light and just how we, you know, how we perceive our vision. And a partly exposed target appears farther away than it actually is. Once again, you know, your body's trying to make sense, your eyes are trying to make sense of what it sees. If it doesn't have a full picture, then that's going to, you know, affect your depth perception.
Right. And much like the nature of the target, then you have your nature of your terrain. Terrain's a different animal. So as your eye follows the contour of the terrain, it tends to overestimate distance targets. Terrain can be a fickle thing. And so if you're observing over, like, say, smooth terrain, like snow or sand or water, it does cause your vision to sort of underestimate distant targets. So, I mean, without getting too much into it, water is a different monster, because you're on a moving, if you're out there on the water, your platform, your ship is bobbing up and down, side to side, and also your targets is also doing the same thing. So it's very easy. It's very, very easy to call out a wrong distance.
Well, I mean, think about that. I mean, you have the horizon, which is in your eyes, right, a constant. You have the water and the waves, which are not constants. You have your depth that's getting screwed over. You have, you know, glint and, you know, shine off the waves. I mean,
yep.
It's a lot to lot for your brain to try to process.
Right. And you run into the same thing also with sand and snow, because, I mean, Jesus, if you've ever heard of seen or experienced snow blindness, it can screw with your depth perception like no other. And of course, yeah, you've seen the old cartoons of, like, people seeing oasis. The plural of oasis is in the sand, no out in the distance, and they keep going towards it and keep going towards it, and it's just not there. I mean, that's because of heat radiating from the ground and distorting your vision, and that will completely screw over your distance calculations for sure.
I was gonna say, I have two stories on that. So when we were road tripping from, you know, here back home to Oregon, we drove through Nevada, which 10 out of 10 don't recommend. That was terrible. Felt like I was on a freaking treadmill, because we went down into this depression down this road, and the road went on forever. It was just straight. And I'm like, we're gonna freaking die here. Like, this road does not end. Flying 90 miles an hour, nowhere, going nowhere. Yeah. Like,
I 10 out of 10 recommend flying into and out of Nevada. Don't ever drive through it.
It was miserable. And then the other one, not a personal story, but, you know, I grew up in Oregon, and Crater Lake. When they had helicopters that would fly over the water, they actually had one crash into the water, because the pilots were looking down into the water. It was so clear, and their depth perception got screwed up. They actually went right into it.
And they were never
able to recover the aircraft. It's too deep. They haven't been able to venture down there.
That's right. That's a deep lake. Yeah. The water does not give up its dead.
Yeah, scurry. Also, you know, you have to think of that. So, like, who knows how deep it is, but that, you know, just your eyes trying to perceive that depth. Good luck.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Good luck. Okay. So, final 2 points on nature of terrain. If you have a target downhill from you, it's going to appear further away than what it actually is. And your calculations on how to hit that target too are going to be...
Oh, it's going to be screwed. It's going to be screwed. Math sucks.
And of course, the opposite targets uphill from you are going to appear closer than what they actually are. And of course, shooting uphill is also a pain in the ass.
Another monster. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Light conditions. So the more clearly a target can be perceived, the closer it appears. It's like we were talking about, like, with the contrast or blurry images, the more clearly you can see a target, the crisper that image is, the closer it's going to look like to you. When the sun is behind you, your target's going to look closer than it actually is. And the reverse is true. So if the sun is behind your target, then one, it's going to be more difficult to see your target, and two, it's going to look farther away. You look like you had a thought.
No
thoughts to be had.
No.
So that leads into our methods. So methods of range estimation. We have map estimation, the 100-meter method, the football field method. appearance of objects, bracketing, flash to bang, middle relation formula, range card, laser rangefinder, and combination method.
So map estimation. For this, it's pretty simple. You're going to need a map. And a good estimation and understanding of where you and your target's locations are. Pros to this, so it's accurate. Obviously, you're using a map. As long as you know where you are and your target is, it's going to be accurate. This is very useful for if you're calling for fire, if you're doing a range card, stuff like that. It's
because it all leads into each other.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Cons of this. Obviously necessitates having equipment. So your map, compass, protractor, map pins, map markers, red light, white light, general understanding of land nav. And it also necessitates accurate locations of yourself and your target. Because if you are off and you're calling for fire, unless you have some dumb luck, you're going to miss.
Well, even if you're just, you know, calling a shot.
Correct.
Right? Just as a marksman, if you're calling your shot and, you know, you hit the wrong ridge line, then, you know, you're dreaming.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to put a round on target if you can't accurately describe where your target's at, especially by using map.
Right. So go for it.
Okay. Pretty simple. Pretty simple instructions for this. Number one, plot your location. Number two, plot the target's location. Lay down a piece of paper right in line with those two. Make a couple tick marks at your location, your target's location. There's your distance. Take that piece of paper down to the scaled bar graph on your map. And Bob's your uncle. There you go. There's your distance.
Super quick, super easy. Does need a solid map. So talking about like a Caltopa map, you know, USGI map, whatever, and, you know, forestry map, whatever. And the reason why that is so accurate is because those have a standard of accuracy.
Yes.
That they have to uphold to. So that's why it's a good method. You know, like you said earlier, the only thing I don't like about that is that you have to have a map on you of your current location all the time. And you need to know, you know, where you are and where your target is. So if you're setting up like an ambush, perfect. Go for it. That's awesome. You know where, you know, generally where the bag is going to be, and you'll be able to do your thing. If you're doing this on the fly, not as fun.
No, time is of the essence there.
Yeah. And 100 meter method. This is my go-to, honestly. I call it the football field method.
Yep.
But before we go into this, we know 100 meters is not the same as 100 yards. 100 meters Correct. Is technically equal to 109.36 yards. Or the Americans, our biggest audience, for familiarity's sake, it's close enough.
Yes, I'll take it. Close enough.
So, oh, that disclaimer, because I know someone was going to say it. I know someone was going to say it. So I just had to throw it in there.
As anyone outside of the U.S. will say, Americans will measure things in everything but the metric system. And that is true.
The other way.
I will measure out distance in hamburgers before I will measure it out in meters.
I won that, right? So pros to the football field method. Super quick, super easy, no equipment needed. Yes. Pretty much anybody who's been on a football field can do it. Cons, only useful to about 500 meters. That's about as far as you're going to be able to push that out to with a good degree of accuracy.
Yeah.
And you need to be able to visualize a football field. So for our audience who is not fortunate enough to, you know, live and grow up in the United States, then, you know, you're kind of SOL. Unless you've been here. In which case,
soccer field is fairly close to a football field, if I remember right.
That's fairly close. At this point, you're eyeballing it. You're not going to get like down to the meter.
No. But, no.
like you said, quick and easy steps. So you're going to ID your target, and then you're going to imagine how many football fields you can be to fit between you and the target. That's it. And at some point, you're just going to be able to eyeball. You won't really have to, like, bracket it out. But, yeah. Quickest, easiest way I've been able to teach it to somebody. But I mean, you have to be familiar with, you know, with that unit measurement.
Yes. Oh, God, yes. So, next one is your appearance of the objects. Pros of this, it's fast. It's very fast. Don't even need any equipment. Cons, this is only reliable out to 700 meters. And closer, obviously. And it's a perishable skill.
You need to have this down pat, practiced. Mm-hmm.
Practice, practice, practice. How do you practice? Take a humanoid target out into the woods, or you can use the handy dandy easement lines with those gigantic high voltage power lines. Clear area, measure out distance, and just kind of set out some targets and just practice that way. It's fairly easy.
Yeah, or the idea of the appearance of object is how well your eyes can perceive
mm-hmm.
the target. How clear the target is a good guesstimation of how far away it is.
Right. Unless you're trying to measure out midgets versus giants, like it's the acquisition and the recognition is going to be very, very quick as long as you have practiced this kind of thing. So the a humanoid target at 200 meters, it's pretty clear in detail. You can see basically everything on that. At 300 meters, you get a clear body outline, you get the face color, but the remaining details are getting a little blurred. It's pretty far out there. It's a full football field. Actually, no, that's three football fields. What am I saying?
We just
a little over, actually. I know, we just talked about this. I was thinking in yards.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
I was thinking of yards. My brain is fried right now, but sorry about that, people. At 400 meters, you get a clear body outline, but you're not getting much else. Everything else is a little bit blurred. That's a pretty far distance. At 500 meters, the body shape is tapered. It looks thinner. It's narrower. It's smaller. And the head is pretty indistinct from the rest of the body. At 600 meters,
it's a blob.
I mean, good luck. The body's a wedge shape, and the head is just not there.
I think that's a person.
I think that's a person. I'll just do a warning shot just to be sure.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Side note, just depending on your skill level, this method could be utilized on other targets. So if you get the general idea of how big a vehicle is or buildings or signs, it's very good skill to have.
It's a more niche one.
Yes. It's like, I remember Sergeant M talking about the license plate method.
We'll talk about that.
Yes. That's a crazy one. And I love that method.
That's my favorite. It's so freaking cool. Oh, all right. Bracketing. So pros, once again, fast, hella fast, no equipment needed. Cons, if you have inaccuracies, which you probably will, they're going to compound with distance. So it's going to get worse as you go. And it requires accurate range of two or more points. So the idea is you're going to ID your target. You're going to determine the nearest point or points of interest. And then you're going to assume that your target is somewhere in between these two distances. So this is where like TRPs come into play. So TRPs, so target reference points. So if I'm looking down, if I'm set up in a building, I'm looking down a street, and the stop sign is 50 meters away from me, and the blue car is 200 meters away from me, and my target is starting at the blue car and coming towards the stop sign, I know those two distances. So I'll be able to rationalize as he moves about where my target is. So it requires two more. If you know, the more points of interest, the more points that you have clocked, the better, obviously. But once again, very fast. That's just mental gymnastics, and you know, off you go.
Speaking of mental gymnastics, I'm glad this one fell to me. The flash to bang method. As a kid, I was growing up on the farm, I was always taught to estimate the distance of a storm based on the lightning. You see the lightning strike and you start counting, and once you hear the thunder, the number of seconds is how many miles away the storm is. This is very similar.
So this is that method,
just in a very pretty much just as dangerous, if not more dangerous, type of situation. So the pros of this, it's very fast. There's no equipment needed. It's very easy to come up with a distance on this. The cons, the accuracy is dependent on your count of the seconds. And definitely the more negative of the cons, someone's going to have to be shot at or fired upon for you to be able to use this method. So
in this context, it's not great.
No, this is not great at all. So what you do? Just like the lightning strike to thunder method, you're going to be counting the seconds.
Sorry, can I jump in really quick?
Do it.
So I just realized, in the show notes, I put down the explanation of this at the end, but people are probably wondering, like, why the hell this works. This works because sound travels at about 330 meters per second. It's technically 343 meters per second. But from the time that you see the flash, as you're counting seconds, right, the sound is traveling to you. If you're at a distance where you're able to perceive the sound, right? So if you see a flash and you hear the bang in 3 seconds, it's about a click. If you hear it in about 5 seconds, it's about a mile. Same deal. When I was a kid, I would count for the lightning. But that's why this works. Is because we're going off of the speed of sound.
And for those of you who are not familiar with the term, a click is a kilometer.
You got me on that one. Yeah.
And for those of us Americans, what the is a kilometer? Anyway.
It doesn't matter. It's the smaller font on my speedometer. It doesn't matter.
Listen, history began in 1776. Everything before that was a mistake. Anyway. What you're going to do is you're going to count the seconds between the time you see a weapon flash and when you hear the bang. So, obviously, you gotta be shot at. You gotta see the flash, the muzzle flash. Start counting immediately. And start counting your seconds. 1,000, 2,000, so on, until you hear the bang or the snap, whatever. If you must count higher than 10, just start over at 1. Keep track of the 10s. So, 8, 9, 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 20, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. When you have that number, multiply it by 330. Just to keep it simple, 330. The product of the approximate distance in meters. The product is the approximate distance in meters to your target. If you want to get really technical about it, multiply it by 343 if you have the brain power and the wherewithal to do it, because if you're getting shot at, 330 is sufficient. It gets you in the neighborhood. Because, like you said, sound does travel at 343 meters per second. But in this case, we're just estimating it at 330.
I was going to say, at that point, I would just divide that by 3. I would just count the clicks so that I could ducky windage that.
You're correct.
Honestly, like that's...
Yeah.
Yeah. If I am going to flash to bang method, like, it's just gonna have to work.
If we're doing flash to bang method, things have gone completely sideways, and I'm probably just gonna be lobbing rounds anyway. I'm gonna guess and I'm gonna go from there.
I'm gonna make an educated guess.
Yeah. All right, guys, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. This podcast is sponsored by Blackbeard Firestarter. Blackbeard Firestarter has been our first choice in Firestarter since they introduced their Firestarter rope years ago.
Blackbeard offers their Firestarters, their fire plugs, arc lighters, ferro rods, stormproof matches, everything you need to get a fire started.
Their products are made right here in the U.S. Wind and waterproof, have an insane burn time. They're basically dummy proof.
And help you out, Blackbeard let us cherry pick from their store everything that we want, everything that we thought you needed to get a fire started, and we call it our Hard Time Strong Men Fire Kit. On top of that, they're also offering a 15% discount on anything in their store when you enter code STRONGMEN at checkout.
We can't recommend Blackbeard enough. They stand behind their products, and so do we.
Be sure to check them out at blackbeardfire.com and on Instagram at blackbeardfire. And as always, stay in the fight.
Stay in the fight. And now a word from our newest sponsor, Granite Rifle Group. Granite Rifle Group is a precision rifle company owned and operated by a USMC veteran. You've probably heard him on our show.
Granite offers turnkey rifle solutions built around your field use with plug-and-play upgrades available to tailor your rifle for your specific needs. GRG offers simple rifle kits or complete custom builds available to suit every need, from the weekend target shooter or hunter to the long-range precision rifleman.
Granite Rifle Group is all about putting high-quality precision rifles into the hands of Americans to extend the reach of the American rifleman. And when you use the code STRONGMEN at checkout, you'll get 6.9% off your order. Nice.
Nice. Check them out at graniterifelegroup.com or find them on Instagram at granite_rifle_group_LLC. And as always, stay in the fight.
Stay in the fight.
And we're back.
We're back.
All right, guys. So, like we said earlier, we're going to go into the whys. That works in my neurospice brain. That doesn't work for any of you because you're just listening. But let's go into the mill relation formula. So, pros, highly accurate. It can be used at extended distances. And it can be used for a wide range of targets. That's what I was trying to tie into with the license plates and everything.
Yes.
Anyways,
I knew we'd get there.
We'd get there eventually. Cons, it requires a mill-edged reticle. It requires knowledge of the general size of your target, requires math, and it requires practice for accuracy. So, the method, you're going to ID your target, you're going to get in a steady body position, because you're going to be using your reticle. You're going to adjust your scope for magnification and clarity, match the scope cant to the cant of the target, and you're going to get your mill reading. The mills are the little dots. If you can think of like a military style scope, the lines, the dots, each one of those dots is a mil, or each one of those tick marks is a mil. And then you're going to use your mil relation formula, which is your size of target in inches times 25.4 equals your constant. So a constant can be annotated for future calculations. Example, a human silhouette, a government license plate, government sign, whatever. We're freaking about the license plate thing is because we were talking with a couple sniper buddies of ours, and we were talking about the mill relation formula and everything. But on a previous deployment, what these guys did was they took down the measurements of the government plate for the country they were in, and then they plugged that into their dope book. It's so simple, but it just blew my mind. It's like, oh, holy crap, that's good. Because you could, you know, you may not be able to, you know, mill your target or whatever, but, you know, if you have a parked car, you know, if you're just, you know, setting up a range card or you're setting a position for an ambush or, you know, whatever, you can, you know, go around and plug distances. No sweat. But that's just a really cool application.
So one thing that you need to keep in mind too is you may not have a mil dot scope. You may have an MRAD. You may have milliradians, and that's a different calculation altogether.
Absolutely.
Kind of a pain, but it is what it is.
Very much pain.
So
So you're going to divide the constant by the mill reading, height or width. You're going to round that to the nearest whole number. And that product is going to be the range to your target in meters. So this is where, so in my little, I don't know where it is, in my little green book somewhere, I have the average width and height of a human silhouette or human torso for use on MilDot scopes. And you can do that, like I said, for license plates. You can do that for, you know, whatever will be standardized in your area.
Yeah. And we definitely won't go into the conversion between MilDot and milliradians, just because that's a lot of math. And I'll be honest, that's not this episode. That's just
Well, MilDot is more prevalent than MRAD.
It really is.
If you have a scope, it's probably going to be in MilDot.
It is. Unless you're,
honestly, because it's easier to use.
Unless you're a psychopath and you get an MRAD freaking scope, which, why would you?
Like a weirdo.
Yeah, definitely a weirdo. All right, so range cards. Pros here. These can be passed to and used by multiple observers. It's a quick snapshot of the observer's point and field of view. The cons of this, it is time intensive. You want to be highly accurate on everything, and you're going to be taking accurate distance readings to different points. So the range card is really only accurate from the observer's specific location. You can't take this and move it 20 feet to your right and 5 feet back. It's not going to be accurate at that point.
Well, you can't move your position. You can't pass off to somebody who's going to be in a different spot. It is right where you're at, where you're observing. That is the only way, the only place that it's useful.
Exactly. It requires a basic level of artistry and penmanship for others to use, because if you can read your handwriting but no one else can, it's pointless. So we'll do an episode on range cards in the future, and we may actually have range card downloadable for you guys.
What?
Oh, no.
In the works.
All right. Yes, definitely works. Ugh. So you're going to have to annotate pertinent information. So grid locations, weapon system in place, the date, the time, if you want to. You're gonna label your
so if this is for you, obviously you're, you know, a good grid location, whatever weapon system you're using. If this is for anybody else, you know, you could have range cards that interlock. So hey, this position number one, number five, number, you know, whatever, you know, your unit information, you know, etc.
Yep. So you're gonna label your left and right limits of observation. You're going to draw points of interest and additional information for orientation. So that could be trees, it could be buildings, it could be a cow, that could be a dead body, it could be any number of things.
Car, barn, whatever, building,
yeah, whatever. Whatever you're going to use to be able to quick reference a distance. You're going to need to acquire the azimuth and distance for each of those points of interest. If you're drawing it on that map, you need distance and direction for each of them. You're going to want to draw target reference points, TRPs, and you're going to want to also acquire azimuth and distance for each of those, because, I mean, you need to be able to look quickly at this range card and instantly know the distance to all of your TRPs, so all of your points of interest.
Absolutely.
That way you can communicate that either to hire or with someone else.
Right.
Hey, there's somebody moving over at this cow that's laying down in the field that's probably dead. Distance is 323 meters. What do you got over there? Can you locate this guy over there? Yep, I got you. It's 270 meters from us. I see the guy. Gotcha. Roger.
Well, exactly. So interlock sensors, fire, TRPs, so just standardized stuff so that, you know, all that communication, you're breaking down the time it takes for you to figure out what everyone's talking about.
Yes. Oh, dude, get us into the
laser rangefinder.
Yes.
The Gucci. The Gucci. The most consistently accurate resource available for measuring distance. It can even go out to extreme distances. Cons of the rangefinder, it does, you know, require the rangefinder, which can be bulky or heavy or expensive, stuff that you don't want to give, you know, your kid or private or whatever. And it does produce a electronic signature that is visible on the modern battlefield.
I will also say this. Langer rangefinders are accurate in two ways. Number one, it's probably going to be more, if I'm trying to remember, I believe they are more accurate at extreme distances off of reflective surfaces than they are off of non-reflective surfaces. So say you're, if you're ranging, say, a mirror at 1400 meters, it's going to be accurate versus if you're ranging a deer at 1400 meters. Like, you're either not going to get a reading or you're going to get a totally inaccurate one.
So, how to use it? Aim your rangefinding device at the center mass of the target. Press the button. Get your reading. It's literally point and shoot.
It's basically dummy proof.
Although we will say that no device is infallible, and you absolutely need to have other resources and techniques available to you. Do not rely solely on equipment.
I will say, if you have
never end well for you.
If you have a laser rangefinder, you well better have a map. I'm just going to say it. If you have to ask why. Well, screw it. If you are asking why, it doesn't matter if you can laze and get the range on something. If you're trying to relay distance and direction to someone else who's not standing directly next to you, it doesn't matter how far. It doesn't matter how far that target is. You got to be able to relay distance and direction, especially from your OP. This is right. Very pertinent information, especially when it comes to calling for fire.
God, you know what? We should do an ATAC episode. I saw that.
We're going to have
blue force tracking.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with ATAC being so prevalent now. Civilian side, like, guys are getting into it with mesh-tastic, with drones, with all sorts of crap. Like, that'd be a fun episode.
Yes. Oh my god, lasing from a drone? Jesus, because then you have GPS location plus the range. Oh my god.
Mm-hmm.
That thought just came to mind. That's sickening. So that brings us to the combination method. This is probably going to be your most accurate method available to you. And this is used to confirm accuracy of individual methods. Like we were just talking about, if you have a laser rangefinder, have a map. Be able to call out distance and direction and confirm. Secondary, confirm that distance. The only downside here really is the time suck. I'm not even going to count requiring the use of two or more methods as a con, because really you're confirming your first read. Like, I don't care how many times you laze a freaking target. Like, that's still one method. That could still be off. Have another way of confirming what you just did. So obviously, you're going to range a target by any one method. And like we said, you're going to obtain the range to the target a second time by different means. And then you're just going to compare the accuracy or the difference between the two products. And take the weighted average of the two methods. Unless you know for sure one of them is incredibly on point. like, beyond the shadow of a doubt, this is accurate. You're still going to want to take the weighted effort, the weighted average, if you're not sure. And use the product of the weighted average to determine the distance. So if speed is not a factor, the combination method is your go-to for accuracy and confirming your ranging methods.
Right. Yep. So if you're set up in a position, if you've been there, if you're going to be there a while, if you're working with, you know, multiple other parties, this is the go-to because it's going to be your most accurate.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have someone lazing with a range fire, if you have somebody on a mil-dot reticle, if you have somebody, you know, bracketing on already known points, you're going to get it's giving you a clearer picture, a more holistic picture of the range. And it's, you know, confirming. So if you have someone doing a mil-dot and you have somebody bracketing or footballing or, you know, whatever, and then you have someone, you know, on the range finder and you all get the same answer, then okay, cool, my range finder works.
Yeah.
So then you don't have to do that every time. You know, you're confirming that your methods work.
Right. So and it can also be used to disprove someone else's method. So say someone has a range card and they have it out something out
absolutely
at this, but then you do a map method or a laser range find method and you have two different methods coming up with the same distance versus the range card. I mean, obviously that range card's wrong. I mean, same thing could be said of, say, using a map bracketing versus a laser rangefinder. If that laser rangefinder is off and the other two are the same number, I mean, obviously it's really just for confirmation. That's what it is.
Yeah. Or if you have a rangefinder and you already have known distances, so you're bracketing and then you have someone calling out, you know, a distance that's like 200 meters off, you can be like, no, dude, you suck. Like,
yeah,
get better at this.
Yes.
And do it again. It just keeps you in check.
Do it again.
Do you have anything else for this one, man?
No, not really. This was pretty fairly in depth. We kind of went through this pretty quick, but I mean,
so it covered like 9 points. So I feel like we got the picture. So,
I mean, what? So, by far, what is your go-to method here? Like, what is your most common method?
I instinctually do the football field.
Okay.
I don't even think about it. Like, that is just the one that I just do.
Okay.
That's my go-to every time. If I have time, if I have a scope available, I'll do mil dot.
Okay.
Just because I just love the formula. And it's accurate.
Yeah. But
if I'm just eyeballing something, I do the football field method.
Okay. That makes sense. I, living down in Florida, I find myself doing the flash to bang method more often than not.
Good old Florida.
Just because I'm trying to figure out how far away the storm is.
Like, is the hurricane here yet?
You're right. Exactly. I mean, otherwise,
show me on the map where the tornado hurt you.
Thank God for those ancient Indian burial grounds off the coast that are keeping us safe, allegedly. But no, I mean, my secondary method is always my laser rangefinder. I love my laser rangefinder. It's just, it's awesome. Like, I carry.
If I had one, I'd use the crap out of it. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, I do. I've killed two batteries with it. I know the distance to my neighbor's house down to the meter throughout the entire cul-de-sac.
That is something we didn't talk about, that, but I love that for laser range fires. If you know that you're accurate, if you know you've got a solid piece of equipment, I'd use the hell out of that thing, because you could make range cars, sector sketch, anywhere you go. And be set up. So hunting, like, so it's talking about the book, right? So hunting, if you're set up in a spot or in a location, 5 minutes. Bam, 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 bam. Nail everything down. And then you have so much information to go off with that. They're wicked cool.
That's another thing. I don't think we put that in there as a pro. It's incredibly fast. like dumb fast. Like you literally pull it up, you line it up, you click a button, and it's there.
And most of the time it has the reading like as you're looking around. It's just when you click it, it snapshots it holds that distance.
Yep.
But yeah, no, they're freaking cool, man.
It does. There is an argument that can be made that relying too much on technology will lessen your ability to visually estimate because you're just going off of it and it's just it's there. You're not doing the calculations in your head at all anymore. You're relying on this piece of technology. So there is an argument to be made for that. 100%. So
I agree with that. It's the same thing as a GPS.
Right.
The more you rely on the GPS, the less than you rely on yourself to remember where you're going.
That's always why we emphasize skills over gear, because I mean, your batteries could die on your laser rangefinder, and then what? Like, if you can't estimate any other way, like you're screwed. You're screwed. So definitely practice other methods. Definitely have an understanding of all the other methods. That way you're not just like SOL when you need it.
Right. Well, you know, think of all of these skills as contingencies.
Yes.
I have my laser rangefinder. Yay. I'll use that. Oh crap, that went down. I have my scope. I can use the middle laser for it. Oh crap, that went down. I can eyeball in 3, 4, or 5 different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's dark, well crap, I can't eyeball it. Flash to bang. I mean, there's, you know, use these in layers. It's like security. Good security is layered. You know, you do the same thing for, you know, your four pillars. I think that the rule of three, having, you know, one primary, then two alternates or two contingencies, should be a standard for all of your skills. You should be able to do any one thing three ways, unless if it's hyper specific, just to have those contingencies in place, just to have that security in place.
Yeah, if you're not doing it that way, if you're not having secondary and tertiary methods of anything, you're doing this wrong. Be prepared. Like, just personally, I just assume my first method is going to not work. So I always have backup methods, whether it's creating a fire, measuring distances, cooking food,
purifying water.
Thank you. Creating shelter.
Your first method is like your perfect world in my, you know, at least in my mind, I'm just like, yeah, but it's not a perfect world. So of course I'm going to lose it.
Right.
You know? So no, 1000%, but that's all I've got for it. You got anything else?
No, man, that's all I got.
No, guys, this was Rangefinder. We're the Hard Time Strongman podcast, training of a bear class of man. Stay in the fight.
Stay in the fight. And for those of you who are patrons, stay tuned for your post show. Check out our Discord, where we talk about all of the topics that we talk about in our conversations, but in deep dive format. We have a lot of members on there of varying skill sets, of varying proficiencies, all talking about all these topics, sharing their experiences. So join today and help us expand our knowledge base.
And check out our Patreon outside of just backing up all of our episodes for when we eventually get canceled. Our patrons get access to our exclusive episodes, our pre-shows, our post-shows, our little tidbits here and there that we aren't really supposed to talk about. We're also opening up all of these exclusive episodes for people to individually purchase. So you don't have to get tied into a tier in order to get all that content. You can dip your toes in a little bit, decide you like it, then come and join us on that. We're having exclusive conversations. And along with the Discord, we are just building that community, building that skill set, that mastery, these proficiencies. And this outside of our sponsor is what's keeping the lights on and keeping all of this information, all these classes rolling for you guys. So make sure to check our Patreon. And one last thing, guys, the world is better with you in it. If you're feeling suicidal or if you're in crisis, dial 988 or reach out at 988lifeline.org to get help. Someone's always on the line. So if you need a lifeline, remember 988. Stay in the fight.
Stay in the fight.